Good Saturday morning. Welcome back to Retracing Our Roots. I'm happy to be back in the studio this morning. I've had a bit of a vacation over the last week, so appreciate y'all. Hope you enjoyed last week's replay with Heather Loftus and Vincent Anderson. Joining me in the studio this morning, we've got Sonny Sharp here. Sonny, you guys have been real busy over there at the Historical Society. We're going to talk about a different topic today, but I wanted to get a quick update on how the Casey House is going this morning.
Our fundraising effort, All Aboard for the Casey House, is going very well. We are getting a lot of community support. We appreciate you folks' support out here at KTLO. We're getting good involvement from a lot of folks that we hadn't heard from before, and that's nice. Folks maybe taking an interest in the old place, perhaps hadn't been high on the radar for a while. But we're involved. The Casey House, the county owns it. The Historical Society works with the county to help maintain it. And we're working with contractor Born to Build from the Little Rock area. And they've done some wonderful work on the outside of the place. And we've got part of the outside, the back porch, they were still in need to finish, and that's where the fundraising comes in. We want to be able to use the place, open it up more to the public, but in order to do that, it has to be safe, and that back porch needs some work. But the grant money that we were able to, that we thought we were going to get to enable us to do that, was a bit short. There were other priorities the state had. So we're involved in trying to raise the money for that. So we can, the goal is to open it up to the public by the county fair so we get maximum attendance at it. Our fundraising, All Aboard for the Casey House, is a simple saying of we calculated the back porch would take 100 white pine boards. We were offering the public an opportunity to sponsor a board. For $150, one or more, as many as they like, in order to go toward the money needed to finish the work. Now we can't offer folks an opportunity to get their name on the board. I don't want that to be a misconception. A historic property, well, they don't let you do that.
Yeah, our names aren't historic yet.
Well, we're working on it. Yeah. At least I am. But anyway, we're having a great time. We appreciate the public support. It's going well. We hope that it continues. We have the contractor coming up here in a short time to talk about specific planning, and the whole idea is to bring it together by the county fair. Lots of fun, but lots to do.
Lots to do. Well, it looks great from the outside, and I'm sure we're all looking forward to seeing that. Once the county fair kicks off. Sonny, you got an interesting topic planned out for us today. What are we talking about?
Yeah, let's talk about the thing we take for granted most around here, and that's cars. I mean, my goodness.
We've all got a couple of those.
Everybody has them. Everybody needs them. The only real thing sometimes is what kind you got and what it cost you or how much is gasoline or something like that. But you go back, it wasn't always that way. Like you go back, let's start back at, say, 1909. Here in Mountain Home, Arkansas, you could read a small ad in the Baxter Bulletin, say, on February the 5th, and I quote, "Good rigs, good drivers to anywhere in North Arkansas. Phone to Cole and Mooney, Mountain Home, Arkansas. When you step off the train at Cotter, call a Mountain Home hack."
Now, okay. What's a hack?
Well... Now, hack, in today's parlance, you could say, well, it might refer to a less than desirable person or certainly an unwanted computer intrusion, but the word dates way back to the 17th century England from the hackney, which is a type of horse, and then it evolved to what the horse was pulling, and it was really a wagon with bench seats, oftentimes extra seating, often covered. And there's an important link. See, the railroad had started to bring passengers to the area the Cotter in 1906. There were lots of newcomers coming in, and a real market started to develop for horse-drawn vehicles. Folks had to have a way of getting around. And when you step off the train, you got your luggage and your kids, and that's probably about it. So you could read advertisements in the local paper for buggies and hacks, $45 to $90. And you could, if you really want to splurge, a half-platform spring wagon or hack with top, you can get it for $100. Now, all you had to do was call Mr. I.J. Morris, the implement man, okay? Now, these ads became pretty routine, almost every paper going forward, and marketing techniques developed. The pricing got refined a little bit, $35 to $65 to start and more, but then they would add the double the time can be made by the farmer having a buggy or hack to do his running around in, to say nothing about the comfort.
They've been selling us from the beginning.
Doesn't that work every time? It's timeless. Now, I guess you'd think that new normal would be with us for a good while, but, well, someone said progress waits for no man. The very next week, February the 12th, the Baxter Bulletin published a news item with some humor. Man, it's doubtful that folks understood what was just over the hill. And I quote, "Honk, honk, the strange noise came from the main road heading out toward Iuka on last Saturday," which would have been February the 7th, okay? Mm-hmm. "Those sitting around on the street looked up for the geese. Nothing in sight. In a few minutes, the honk, honk was heard again." And I'll try and make this sound. It said, "Then came the sound of which was supposed to be part of a gasoline engine. Then the smell of petrol, the first benzene buggy that ever passed through the portals of this town, swung around the corner of the square and came to a stop."
Wow.
And talk about a day that will live in infamy. No, anyway.
People remember.
It'll always be significant.
Yes.
But anyway, as you can might imagine, lots of folks were curious, had to comment on it. The driver was a guy named John Klein, who represented a firm out of Chicago. And they were introducing the automobile to the Ozarks. Now, he started his trip in Newport, came up through Melbourne, and he stopped here on his way to Harrison. And he reported that his machine performed well. Now, he got lost several times.
Well, it wasn't good signs back then.
The roads probably weren't that good either. He mentioned also, while fording a creek, high water put him out of business for a little bit. But other than that, it was a successful arrival, the first motor car. Now, the bulletin concluded that with roads here about as bad as they can get, if they can be driven here, there's no reason why they should be a stranger to these hills any longer. Didn't take long. The horse-drawn hack operator, Colin Mooney, I just talked to you about, soon reported putting in an automobile line from the train depot at Cotter to Mountain Home. The bulletin reported on April the 30th, that there was a line assured. A fine car will begin a short time in May. A gentleman named Tanksley from Cotter was going to run this thing, and as traffic demands, he might expand it. Now, he had an edge because he had the current horse-drawn hack mail contract.
Okay.
But the advantage here was he could make multiple trips instead of just the one per day. So he had an edge, and he got the contract. But anyway, as traffic increased, so did efforts to improve the road, because the roads were nothing much to brag about back then. And let's just say this was 1909, 1910, so there wasn't any real state anything, and any efforts were pretty much local, and that was it. The bulletin reported that a group of 50 Mountain Home men and boys turned out to work the road one morning. They started at 8 a.m., threw out rocks, blasted stumps, filled in bad places, and graded down the bumps. And from the reports, they did a rattling good job. Now, on 4 miles of road from the Mount Home end.
Right.
So they had a little work to do. Now, which was kind of fun, the bulletin would editorialize that North Arkansas will someday have the best roads in the United States, as they have the material right along the roads in most instances.
Well, we got plenty of rocks.
Pretty much. Well, unfortunately, the road between here and Cotter wouldn't really be all weather until all gravel was applied until the late 20s in preparation for the completion of the Cotter Bridge and also the brand new U.S. Highway 62. Remember, it came through here, and we were a major choke point that was resolved by the bridge there and also the bridge of Henderson. But anyway, that really was the milestone for the road, finally.
Folks, we'll be back with more Retracing Our Roots right after this break.
Visiting with Russell Tucker of Raps Baron, sip, savor, sojourn. What does that mean to you?
Sojourn is the idea that we have just this short time together on this earth, and we have the opportunity to make the most of that. And so we wanted to create a space that welcomed all of our community to celebrate each other, to connect with each other, something that allows you to set your phone down, step away from the TV, and actually have real human connections with people.
Raps Baron in the Baker District, Mountain Home.
Welcome back to Retracing Our Roots here on KTLO, visiting with Sonny Sharp about the newfangled technology that came to the Twin Lakes area, vehicles, and of course, once we got a Highway 62 and a little bridge over Cotter, Sonny, I bet people started wanting to get some of these cars for themselves.
Well, the market for cars certainly was expanding, you know, for people to get, you know, they wanted their own. Well, unfortunately, there wasn't a whole lot of automotive expertise here, and dealers happened gradually, okay? People from outside the area would offer their services. There was an advertisement in the bulletin on October 2nd, 1914, said, "I will come to Mountain Home or Cotter at any time to make repairs on automobiles. Price is right. Write or phone me at Batesville, Arkansas." Now, pretty creative fella.
Yeah.
His name was John Baker. Now, the Chevrolet Motor Company of St. Louis, Missouri, ran an advertisement May 3rd, 1918, that their new models of their Chevrolet are now on display at their place in St. Louis.
Well, that you'd have to go up there to get
all
one.
All you had to do is come pick it up, right? Basically, it said write for booklet model 490. Now, eventually, facilities would develop along the railroad in Norfolk. They had a Ford dealership in the Sid Hutchison building. It's right there. I think it's still standing. It's on Highway 5 South as you go through town on the left. And this was in 1919. There was an advertisement for Ortman and Son Garage, which is Ford, in Cotter. Now, that building's still standing. It's on 2nd Street. And I know where that thing is. I mean, it still looks in pretty good shape. But October the 5th, 1923, a fellow named R.C. McDonald from over in Flippin ran an ad. Said that Chevrolet had appointed him the sales agents for Marion and Baxter counties, come so he could demonstrate the quality of their products. So he had cars to show. Now, May 2nd, 1928, the auto dealer in Mountain Home called Vickery Cox Chevrolet was on the corner of 8th and Baker. And for many years, it was a Chevrolet dealership there. Looking back, it was Hackler, Fisk, Kent, all sorts of folks over the years. And he offered pricing of, in his ad of $375 to $715 for his ware he had.
Hard to imagine.
Well, in present-day dollars, that's probably quite a bit. Now, Marianne Edge's book, Around the Square from Raps Baron to Mountain Home, showed to Mr. N.C. Eatman Ford on the corner of the square, the southeast corner of the square, and the building is still there today. And he showed pricing of $298 to $595. And there was a garage on present-day 7th Street directly behind it. So things started to move. More familiar names to folks. T.J. McCabe Ford ads appeared in late 1934. And I guess you can say the industry has been well represented ever since. Now, looking back, I can remember my favorite brands and models and even their media commercials. But with the development of technology and features and computers, I have buttons on my dash and my Ford that I don't even push. I don't know what it is and I don't want to know.
He might get ejected or something. Who knows?
No, but I just enjoy it. It's a wonderful transition. My goodness, you think of the vehicles in our market we have here locally all around the area. Yeah, it's quite something. But to go from 1909 to now, as quick as we have, that's almost a local moonshot.
Sonny, you brought in an interesting photo of your grandfather in his first vehicle. We talked about your grandfather. He was a prominent fellow who got in a little trouble for closing Highway 62 that ran through his farm. But tell us the story of how him and his brother got their first car.
It was his son, Robert.
Son, okay.
In the 20s. Used to ride the trains up to the Midwest to work in the wheat fields, earn money, and come back and enjoy their earnings. Well, one year they came back, not on the train, but they came back driving it's a open-top roadster, and my mother used to delight and tell me stories. She was in this picture of my grandfather, my grandmother, and my mother-to-be, and she was at age 12, and they were in this thing, pictured out there on the farm on E-62. And when he drove up in that thing, apparently my grandmother had an absolute fit. Like, you spent our money on that? And unfortunately, from what I'm told, it didn't last very long because they had no money to support it. And I'm not sure where it is. I heard several rumors that it's somewhere on the property, but I don't want to look.
Probably not much left at this point. Sonny, what was your favorite car when you think about your favorite car?
Oh, my goodness. I remember my first car was a 1952 Ford. And it's funny, you know, it had twin pipes on the front and on the back, because back in our day, kids had an affinity for mufflers. I mean, boy, if you had a glass pack on your car, you were the boss, right? Until someone else had a bigger one.
Yeah.
Well, when I look around nowadays, young people still seem to have affinity for noise with their car. But it's with their stereo systems.
That's true.
And I guess some people call them boomers. And I understand there's even contests for people who have the most impressive system. And if the job is to rattle windows of old folks, they're doing a great job. But I guess noise is noise. And, you know, as we said before, it's amazing as things change how they remain the same.
One thing that's probably also stayed the same through those years is you guys were probably tuning into the old KTLO AM back then in the 50s.
Oh, my goodness. I can remember, I think it was Saturday morning, we used to listen to Eldon Downing. He was a DJ and he'd play music, and there'd be a gentleman named Marvin Stafford, and he'd come in. They'd sing live on the radio at a little studio, and he would say, I won't try to sing his song, but he was talking about how he would wonder if anyone remembered him in his hometown and wondered what the folks would say if he wandered in and just moseyed around. And then he would go into a humming, but he'd be singing at the time and strumming his guitar. And those were the days, because people just really enjoyed that car. It was such a novelty and such a help.
Well, we've gone from the first car showing up to now there's actually cars. I think a few people in town have those ones that'll self-drive themselves around a little bit. So it's been quite the progress.
Well, some years ago, back in, I think it was 2005, I think it was, when the Cotter Bridge was being restored, the Rainbow Arch Bridge, we put out, I was working with the Cotter Area Chamber of Commerce at the time, and for that bridge rededication, we wanted to have periods correct cars be the first to go back across that bridge after it had been repaired for a year. We put out an ad in the paper for that and got about half a dozen, and it was the most remarkable, wonderful sight to see. It really was just a string of 1920s and 30s Model T, that kind of thing. It was a lot of fun, especially in that old bridge and our Cotter.
I bet it was. Well, Sonny, thanks again for coming in and sharing a very interesting topic with us. Let's go back to talking about the people want to get one of those boards for the Casey House. What's the best way to get a hold of you guys?
Best way to do that would be to send us a check to the Baxter County Historical Society, Post Office Box 2125, Mountain Home, Arkansas, 72654. Now, you can donate any amount you wish. It doesn't have to be for an exact number of boards. But the whole idea as far as sponsoring boards, we thought that might make it a little more fun. And folks seem to be responding really well to that, and we appreciate it so much.
Well, folks, for Retracing Our Roots, I'm Sammy Raycraft. I want to thank once again Sonny Sharp for coming in, and we want to thank our sponsor, Rapsbaron Brewing Company, for making the show possible. So next time you're driving through one of these old roads here in Mountain Home around the county, just be glad you're not having to put tubes in your tires like these boys were in the old days. Thank you, Sonny.
Thank you.